Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com. Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
Sitting on a craggy cliff off Highway 1 on this spectacular stretch of the Central Coast, you'll find the Point Sur Lighthouse. It's miles from the nearest town, and it's supposedly haunted by ghosts.
Now she wants you to go.
Did you hear that? Now she wants you to go home.
Now she wants you to go.
It's the California Report magazine. I'm Sasha Coca. I am not a person who really believes in the supernatural. I'm a journalist. I like cold, hard facts. But I gotta say, I did get pretty creeped out a few years ago when I visited that lighthouse for a Halloween story to meet a ghost hunter named Julie Nunes, who says the original lighthouse keepers' families who lived here more than a century ago keep coming back. And she says you can hear those ghosts when you play back some of the recordings she's collected.
Just make it go up to bed.
So it's a little bit hard to hear, but Julie says that's the voice of a former resident named Catherine Ingersoll. She was a Danish immigrant, and she was married to a lighthouse keeper here. And she's apparently telling her daughter, who was nicknamed Pokey, to go up to bed.
Just make it go up to bed.
Julie says that was recorded inside the house where the lighthouse keepers' families used to live. She takes me inside that house, but first she knocks and asks permission in case any of the spirits are still around.
Hello, it's Julie.
Is anybody else here with us for right now that we can't see? Pokey, are you here? Can you come say hi?
I don't hear anything except the wind rattling the windows, but it is getting a little bit creepy. And it's hard to tell if this is just a hokey trick for Halloween, because they have decorated the house with witches' hats and fake skeleton arms.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, did something just move?
Yeah, the hand moved.
The fingers on the fake skeleton hand, they actually twitch. Just slightly.
Well, whoever did that, thank you. Can you make the skeleton hand move again?
The skeleton hand stays still, but I do start hearing this weird buzz in my headphones as I'm recording. So Julie steps in to help.
Could you stop trying to get energy from the equipment? It's affecting their reporting on all of you here at Point Sur. Would you mind stopping the static? On the count of three, one, two, three.
But the ghosts don't listen. The buzz stays until we leave the building. So that's about as close as I've ever come to a ghost. Other than that, I'm pretty skeptical about spooky supernatural encounters. And so was my colleague John Brooks. He's a former science editor at KQED who loves data and facts. Many years ago, John witnessed something inexplicable, though, something he felt just couldn't be squared with reality. And then a recent personal tragedy prompted him to run that story over and over again in his mind. Today on our show, as part of a collaboration with our friends at the Bay Curious podcast, we're going to hear John's ghost story. And just a warning, it involves some intense discussion of death.
I have a ghost story. I mean a real one. It's something I thought about for 27 years. and I still don't know what to make of it. Many people listening will write this off as ridiculous, inane, whatever. All I can say is what happened definitely had an effect on me, and it had a profound effect on a friend of mine.
It changed everything for me, permanently.
That's my friend Mark. I knew him as a cynical New Yorker, mathematically inclined, irreligious, unspiritual.
I was a real skeptic. Like, you know, I just questioned a lot. And it's like, you die and you just shut off like a machine. And after that, there's nothing to explain it other than there's something to it.
Mark won't talk about some of the specific things he saw that freaked him out. He's superstitious about it and thinks it would be disrespectful to what he views as a genuine supernatural event. I had to negotiate with Mark to even use what you will hear from him. When I asked him if he was glad or not that this thing had happened, he went dead silent for longer than I've ever heard him be quiet.
And are you glad you had this experience?
Finally, he said,
I've got mixed feelings.
I'm going to tell you most of the story because I was there. In 1995, Mark and his girlfriend, I'll call her Kim, are visiting me in my small apartment in San Francisco near Haight Street. Mark and Kim are all excited because Mark has just proposed and they're now engaged. So there's a lot of high spirits in the room, some drinking, and I suggest we play with this Ouija board I had picked up at a garage sale. The Ouija board, as you probably know, is thought by some people to put you in touch with spirits, dead people, during a kind of seance. The board has letters on it, and it comes with a heart-shaped piece of plastic with a translucent window in the middle. That's called a planchette. Two people lightly touch the planchette, and spirits are supposed to move it so that it shows letters through the window and spells out messages. I had been wanting to try this Ouija board, but most of my friends thought it was stupid. The board at the time was made by Parker Brothers, which also made the games Monopoly and Clue. So it was hard to take it seriously as a connection to the realm of the dead. Nevertheless, I like spooky things. I didn't necessarily believe them, but who knows? Mark and Kim thought it would be fun as well. As we start, Kim and I are facing each other across the board, and we both have our eyes closed. Mark is on the couch watching, and one of us, I don't remember who, starts calling out to any spirits in the vicinity. Hello? Anybody out there? That kind of thing. At some point, I do feel the planchette start to move under my fingers. I'm not aware I'm applying pressure on it. It just feels like my fingers really know where they want to go. And while this is happening, Mark starts to talk. The planchette, I can feel it moving, stopping. And Mark is saying things in response. Uh-huh. Okay. Got it. It's like he's on the phone and I can only hear his side of the conversation. Eventually, we stop. I open my eyes. And there is Mark, in tears. I mean, he is shaken. He collapses into Kim's arms, and he says, tearfully, I think I just talked to a dead relative. Remember, our eyes have been closed. Only Mark saw what was going on. Here's what he said happened. In 27 years, he has never wavered from this account. When Kim's and my fingers were darting all around the board, we spelled out, M-O-I-S-H-E, Moishe, which is the Yiddish name Mark was called at his bar mitzvah. He says we spelled it out three times in a row. So he responded, what do you want to tell me? Then we spelled out, again three times, W-E-D-R-E-B-B-E, Wed Rebbe. Rebbe is rabbi in Yiddish. Mark interpreted that as an instruction to use a rabbi for his upcoming wedding. Then, whatever it was, spoke to him about his brother, saying, letter for letter, watch over him always. And then it spelled out, "Say hello to Raymond." Raymond is Mark's father. That's when Mark started to freak. He tried to end the session by saying, "Okay, goodbye," to which it spelled out W-H-Y. And he said, and I'll never forget hearing this, "Because I'm scared." And to that, it spelled out the word "friend." So he asked, "Who is this?" And it spelled out R-A-C-H-E-L, Rachel. Rachel was Mark's great-grandmother. Mark hasn't gone near a Ouija board since.
I have a fear of Ouija boards because I believe that they do what they're expected to do.
I'm sure this sounds highly dubious, to say the least. It's somewhat embarrassing for me to talk about. But the fact is, you couldn't be in that room and not feel a sense of eerie wonder. When I think about it even now, I feel the fabric of my reality start to unravel.
Exactly. I mean, John Mack, a psychiatrist from Harvard, he called this ontological shock, where basically something that can't happen does happen.
That's Leslie Kane. She's the journalist who brought the story about Navy pilots in 2015 witnessing UFOs doing seemingly impossible things to the pages of the New York Times. She also wrote a book and a Netflix series called Surviving Death about what she says is evidence for an afterlife.
The other thing that happens often is that in the moment, you're in the middle of that experience and it's like you're in that experience. And then afterwards is when you start to doubt and question it.
True. As a participant, I have always found Mark's account mesmerizing. And yet, as much as I want to take his experience at face value, I can't. I spent 5 years as a KQED science editor grilling reporters on their interpretation of research data. I know that evidentially the Ouija board story is pretty thin. If a reporter came to me and said they wanted to write this up as proof of something, I'd ask them for the video and a signed release form from the ghost.
So here we're kind of faced with a what's more likely question. I call it Hume's challenge. You know, what's more likely, the miracle happened or the person misremembered or exaggerated what they think happened?
When you have a paranormal story like this and you're a journalist, who are you going to call? A ghostbuster like Michael Shermer, the founding publisher of Skeptic magazine, which often debunks claims of the paranormal.
You know, the normal explanation for the Ouija board, the ideomotor response, is you can see where you're pushing it, even though you're not consciously doing it. You can swear up and down you're not intentionally moving anything, but subconsciously you may be.
The ideomotor response is a well-known phenomena. It would say Kim and I were unconsciously moving the planchette to specific letters selected by our subconscious. But here's the thing. Researchers have found the ideomotor response only produces coherent Ouija board messages when participants can see the board. Mark is the only eyewitness to this event, and he is so clear about it.
Part of what gives me 100% of confidence is there was no peeking. Your head, you weren't even facing forward. You were facing the ceiling the whole time. Your eyes were shut tight. I was monitoring you guys as much as I was looking at the board. It spoke to me silently.
Okay, if the ideomotor response was not responsible for messages like "watch over him always" and "say hello to Raymond," what about this?
How far away was he from the two of you sitting knee to knee? You know, you'd have to be pretty close to be sure you were on the letter A and not the letter B, say, for example, or if you're in between those.
No, because I was actually keeping up with the letters. It was fluidly writing. It wasn't floating. It wasn't near the W and the A. It was like swoosh, 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 like air hockey.
Mark believed so strongly in what he saw, he named his daughter Rachel because of it. When he would get into arguments with his brother, his wife would say, "Remember, watch over him always."
I mean, it's movement and what I saw. It was magical.
You can buy a Ouija board at a toy store for around $15. But despite being marketed as a game for children these days, its pedigree is spookier than you might think, as I learned from Brandon Hodge. He's an expert and lecturer on the history of spirit communication devices.
It's hard to really overstate how incredibly popular and how big of a fad these devices sort of in turn were. It's a massive, massive cultural phenomenon.
He took me through the evolution of these tools for talking with the dead, created during the spiritualism movement that obsessed Americans from the 1840s to the 1920s. Seances with mediums, automatic writing planchettes, and these so-called talking boards like Ouija, invented in 1890, they were all the rage. Eventually, though, people lost interest. In the 1920s, the legendary escape artist Harry Houdini exposed the psychics and mediums who claimed they could communicate with the dead as frauds.
Many of them tended to fall on the con artist side of things. It's not a good look when you have a religion that's largely based on taking advantage of people and then getting caught by the authorities and heralded and sort of pilloried and drugged through the headlines.
Just like Michael Shermer of Skeptic Magazine, Hodge does not believe there's anything paranormal going on with the Ouija board. He thinks it's all the ideomotor response interacting with the subconscious. Okay, but what about Mark's testimony? Eyes shut, Yiddish words, say hello to Raymond.
So that account is just rings so familiar to so many of the accounts that I have studied historically over the years. But I don't underestimate what the human mind and body is capable of and capable of doing when we're not even aware of those actions and those thoughts.
Hodge thinks Mark, Kim, and I unconsciously collaborated to create this narrative of Mark's kindly Jewish great-grandmother. That is a fascinating idea, to think of Mark's Irish Catholic fiance, without knowing it, urging him to use a rabbi for their wedding. But whenever I start thinking this way, Mark's certainty again rings in my ears.
Oh, this absolutely happened. It's not even questionable. It's 100%.
For 27 years, I left the Ouija board story alone. Told it many times, but never by concluding, and I think we really did talk to a dead person. I couldn't attest to exactly what Mark saw. I did know that the memories of him crying, of my fingers going swish, 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 of say hello to Raymond, these were all extremely vivid. Too vivid. Whatever it was, I didn't want to mess with this thing. Until my mother died. My mother had Parkinson's, a known risk factor for choking. And that's what happened. She choked last year in front of me and the rest of my family in a restaurant. We tried the Heimlich. It didn't work. I watched her die. After she died, I felt like I had been subjugated by grief. In a lifetime of worrying about worst-case scenarios, one had finally occurred. I hadn't been able to help my mom. I felt like I had failed her and was going to have to live with that the rest of my life. At first, I grieved in all the usual ways, sobbing, ruminating, isolating. But something I didn't expect was this sudden obsession with my Ouija board story. I had thought about it from time to time over the years when contemplating what happens when people die. But now, I so wanted that final exchange between my mom and me, that last desperate moment when I saw the panic in her eyes to not be our last. I wanted to apologize to her for not reacting quicker, for not being able to save her. I couldn't stop thinking about Mark and his great-grandmother and wondering, could I actually communicate with the dead? I decide to go back to that same apartment I lived in 27 years ago and try the Ouija board again. Maybe there's something about that place. Maybe Mark's great-grandmother Rachel is still hanging around. I rung up the current resident.
I'm sorry to bother you again. I spoke to you the other day. This is John Brooks from KQED. I slipped that note under your door. Did you read it?
Hello?
Okay, that's not happening. The guy does not seem interested in inviting strangers into his home during the pandemic to contact dead people. Go figure. Plan B? Do it at my place with my own hand-picked, let's discredit public radio team of ghost hunters, including our science guy to keep things on the up and up.
So I'm Kevin Stark, and I'm the science editor at KQED and a friend of John's, but I just don't think that we're going to conjure some communication with any of his past loved ones tonight.
Well, I'm Olivia Allen Price, and I am the editor on this story, which is perhaps going to be the strangest story I will have edited. I would say generally skeptic, but definitely the door is not totally closed.
I'm Julianne, and an old friend of John's. I'm open. I'm more of a skeptic than I am a believer.
The weird thing is, all three of them have stories about incidents that appear to them to be paranormal. You start talking to people, it's not that uncommon. With everyone in my house, we have a beer, we discuss protocols for the evening. At the advice of Leslie Kane, the journalist who believes in life after death, I have looked at photos of my mom and asked her to spell out a particular word she would say a lot, which I have written down and sealed in an envelope.
Do you want it to happen because you want a Ouija board to work? Or do you want it to happen because of these experiences you've had recently, your mom passing away?
You know, my mom, it was so horrible. I would just want to say I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry I couldn't help you. You know, I still feel bad about it. I mean, really bad about it. Do I think that's wishful thinking at this point? I do. But on the off chance that maybe it's possible?
Kevin and I start on the board, the very same one from 27 years ago. Olivia and Julianne are observing. To eliminate the idiomotor effect, Kevin and I wear blindfolds.
You guys are ready? So you got your mask on, John?
All right. I can't see. And I assume, Kevin, you cannot see. So just put your fingers lightly on the planchette. And here I go. I'm putting out a general call to anyone who's out there, who's passed away, who wants to speak with us. Any spirits out there who want to talk to us? Keep going. If there's anyone who wants to talk to us, we're listening.
And here we go again. I feel the planchette moving under my fingers. This goes on for a good 10 minutes as the planchette continues to feel like it's floating around. Could it be the word I asked my mom to repeat to me? I'm getting pretty excited. After our hands move to several more positions around the board, I asked Julianne.
All right, I guess at this point I say, is there anything?
No.
Nothing. It's just like going places.
We have not spelled anything coherent. And yet Kevin, our science editor, was still a little weirded out.
So I think when we were leading up to this, I was like, well, we're just going to sit there, you know, our hands just aren't going to move. But the strange thing is very quickly, there's some kind of sensation where it starts pulling you in one direction or another. And I remember at a couple moments thinking to myself, like, oh, this is me. Like, it's just like my reflexes or something like that. And so I would think like, okay, now stop. But it wouldn't stop. It's bizarre.
As an observer out here, it looked like you both had very, very light fingers.
What did you think when you saw it start to move?
I got excited.
Yeah. Julianne, why don't you call out now? Yeah.
So is there anyone out there that wants to speak to us? We're open to hear from you. We're here.
Again, there goes the planchette, moving up, down, all around.
Just give us a sign, anything. We need a few vowels, that might help.
You're not making sense.
After another 10 minutes or so, it's clear we're 0 for 2. It's time to bring out the big guns.
Spirits, come join us. It's a friendly room with people who have open minds and hearts. Use these friends to speak to us.
In a quest to lure in the non-living community, Olivia has gone full ASMR. The dead should be lining up at the board to speak to her.
Okay. That's a letter. We can work with that. Another letter.
But after another 10 minutes...
We're not getting much, guys.
After we'd been at it a good hour and have failed to contact any dead people, let alone my mom, there's nothing left to do but a post-mortem, so to speak.
I feel like we gave it a fair shot. You know, we did not get a result. Nothing even close to what, you know, Mark says he saw, where there was a clear message with a clear purpose. It doesn't mean that the other experience wasn't real. We can only say that we were unable to come up with a result that was anything other than what the skeptics would say we would come up with, which is basically nothing.
Listening to the tape that night, I can hear in our voices how much we wanted something to happen. We wanted to witness something transcendent, something remarkable, something, like Mark said, magical. Why did we fail? Well, maybe the departed didn't want to talk to our particular group. Maybe the house wasn't right. Or maybe no one contacted us because dead people can't. Because they're dead. They're gone. Shut off like a f***ing machine. Maybe my mother will never know how sorry I am about her last moments because she can't know anything anymore. I envy my friend Mark's certainty about seeing messages from a dead relative that night 27 years ago. I would never begrudge it to him. I just wish I'd seen it too. It seems clear I am going to have to come to terms with my mom's death without her help. I wish I could have done something to save her life, but I can't make that moment more important than everything that came before. I once read something by the author Umberto Eco about the futility of mourning a happy time as something lost and not celebrating it as something once possessed. Mom, if you can hear me, and even if you can't, I love you. That is not paranormal. That's as real as it gets.
That was reporter John Brooks. And that's the California Report magazine for this week. We're a production of KQED in San Francisco. This episode was made by our team and the team at Bay Curious. That's Katrina Schwartz, Amanda Font, Olivia Allen Price, Victoria Mauleon, Susie Racho, Brendan Willard, and Jessica Carissa. And I'm Sasha Coca. This is the California Report magazine. Your state, your stories.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com. Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.